Just as Luke had suspected, Almanzar and Lopez had fled. A search of the town, as night was falling, failed to turn up any trace of the two rurales. The man who had wielded the pitchfork and skewered one of the rurales was wounded, but according to the local barber, who doubled as the town's doctor, he was expected to live. The barber did a better job of patching up Thomas Sandoval's wounds, too, and also cleaned and bandaged the bullet graze on Luke's arm. Those were the only casualties among the town's defenders. Luke asked for volunteers to stand guard until morning. He didn't think it was likely Almanzar and Lopez would come back since they were badly outnumbered, but he didn't want to take a chance on the two renegades causing any more trouble. La Farva didn't have a hotel, so Thomas Sandoval invited Luke and Hobie to stay at his house overnight. They accepted the offer, putting their horses in a shed behind the blacksmith shop and spreading their bedrolls in the little cottage next to the forge. By the next morning, there was still no sign of Almanzar and Lopez, so Luke thought it was safe to assume the two rurales were gone for good. Luke sat down to the breakfast that Hobie had prepared. Their host Thomas's wounded leg had stiffened up overnight and made it difficult for him to get around.
They may have even gone back across the border, but probably not. Since they're deserters, other rurales may be looking for them. I doubt very seriously they'll ever be coming back here.
If they do, they'll find out we're a lot more ready for them next time. I think people realize now you can't just let evil men come in and take over, no matter how scared you are. You have to fight back.
Luke stared into his coffee and nodded, but actually he was rather pessimistic about the blacksmith's prediction. The citizens understood that they had to stand up for themselves when they and their way of life were threatened, but over time, they would forget. They would become complacent again, and when the next evil arose, as it always did, they wouldn't be ready for it. They wouldn't realize how much danger they were in until it was too late, and then they could only pray that they had awakened in time. Luke knew better than to think he could change human nature, though. He could only hope that the people of La Farva had learned their lesson. He had to move on. The minor wound on his arm wouldn't stop him from riding. He needed to get back on the trail of Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater. He wasn't the only one thinking about that.
Are we going on after those outlaws today, Mr. Jensen?
Luke finished his coffee and set the cup on the table.
Two things, Hobie. I think after all the help you gave me yesterday, you can call me Luke now.
Hobie looked a little uncomfortable at the idea, but he nodded.
All right, Mr. Jensen. I mean Luke. What was the other thing?
Are you sure you still want to ride with me?
Well, yeah, but I reckon I understand if you don't want me to. I did sort of horn in on this deal. You might not want to give up any of the bounty money.
No, I'll split it fairly with you if we bring in Kelly and the Apache. The 5,000 I'm owed for Monroe Epps is mine, though.
Well, sure. I wouldn't try to claim any of it.
The reason I asked if you were certain you wanted to come along is because you should be starting to understand that this is a hard, dangerous life for a man to follow. Most of the men you'll be tracking down won't hesitate to kill you if they get a chance. You have to be ready to kill them. You can't hesitate once your finger's on the trigger.
I won't. I understand. I did all right yesterday, didn't I?
You did better than all right. But you also probably had quite a bit of luck on your side. Next time, things might not break so well for you.
I'm willing to run that risk. Anyway, I may decide I don't want to keep on being a bounty hunter the rest of my life. I just want to do something to show the folks back in Rio Rojo that I'm more than just the orphan kid who mucks out the stalls at Mr. Dunbar's stable. Nobody's ever thought I was going to amount to much, and I'd like to show them that they're wrong.
All right, Hobie. We'll ride together after those outlaws.
They rode out of La Farva with the shouted thanks and farewells of the townspeople ringing in their ears. They had stocked up on supplies, provided at no charge by a grateful Lloyd Halligan, and filled all six of their canteens at the public well. Luke would have felt a little better about their mission if Kelly and Dog Eater had passed through there. It would have been nice to know that he and Hobie were still on the right trail, but all they could do was keep moving in the direction the fugitives had been traveling. He was confident they would pick up a lead to the outlaws' current whereabouts sooner or later. Several days after leaving La Farva, they came to another small settlement. It appeared normal, with people moving around on the street.
Ooh!
Luke reined to a halt in front of the Golden Buzzard Saloon. A carved wooden buzzard with a coat of gilt paint on it was mounted on top of its sign. Luke thought the figure was ugly, but at the same time, it was certainly striking.
Are we gonna get a drink?
Among other things. Let me do the talking.
They dismounted, tied their horses at the hitch rack, and went inside. The saloon was about half full. Unlike the cantina in La Farva, a couple of women were working, both of them hard-faced veterans of the frontier who showed every year of their drab existence. One of them perked up considerably at the sight of Luke and Hobie. She brushed a hand over her graying blonde hair and smiled as she approached them.
Hello, boys. Can I get you a drink? You can sit down and I'll bring it right to your table.
Luke returned the smile.
Only if you agree to join us.
She glanced at the bartender.
Well, I'm not really supposed to, but I don't think Glenn will mind.
Luke was sure Glenn wouldn't mind, since it was the woman's job to sell drinks. She would try to keep them coming as long as she sat with her customers.
My name is Doris, by the way.
I'm Luke, and my young friend here is Hobie.
I'm pleased to meet you. Just sit anywhere. I'll be back with a bottle and some glasses.
Be sure to bring one for yourself.
I don't know. I'm not used to drinking. You might try to take advantage of me.
I swear on my honor as a gentleman that I wouldn't even think of it.
I don't know if I've ever seen a gentleman drinking in the Golden Buzzard.
Hobie and Luke sat down at one of the tables.
She's kind of a nice-looking lady, isn't she?
Yes, and she's twice your age.
That would make her just about right for you, then.
Don't get any ideas about playing Cupid. I can handle that part of my life just fine, thank you.
No, sir. I mean, yes, sir. I won't.
Doris came back with a bottle and two empty glasses. She had a third glass for herself that already contained a couple of inches of amber liquid. Luke and Hobie stood up politely when she reached the table.
My tastes run more toward brandy. I hope that's all right.
Whatever you like.
Luke knew full well that was weak tea in the glass, not brandy. They sat down and Doris poured shots of whiskey for the two men. Luke lifted his glass.
To make new friends.
How sweet. I think maybe you really are a gentleman.
I always endeavor to be.
Luke tossed back his drink. Hobie did likewise, then immediately got red in the face and started sputtering.
A little too strong for you?
No. Smooth. Just the way I like it.
Luke tried not to grin. He wasn't going to come right out and ask if that was the first drink Hobie had ever taken, but it wouldn't surprise him if that were the case.
Speaking of friends, Doris, a couple of R's may have ridden through here in the past few days. Wonder if you've seen them. A red-headed fella, sort of slender, traveling with an Indian.
Doris instantly tensed at that description.
Those two are friends of yours?
Friends might be too strong a word.
Luke instantly switched tacks when he saw her reaction.
More like acquaintances whose trail crossed ours, really.
Well, those acquaintances of yours caused a lot of trouble when they were here. Well, that Indian especially. He got in a fight over a woman and cut a man pretty badly. Almost killed him. And he smacked the woman around, too. Then when the marshal tried to step in, the redhead shot him.
Did he kill the lawman?
No, but not for lack of trying. It was just luck that poor Marshal Bendix survived. As if they hadn't caused enough trouble, those two robbed the general store. Oh, I hope they never come back here.
Doris folded her arms across her chest and frowned coldly at Luke and Hobie.
If they're friends of yours, I don't think you're welcome here either.
I assure you, we spent less than one evening in their company. And going by what you just told us, I'm thankful they didn't try to rob and murder us. Isn't that right, Hobie?
Yes, sir. They sound like really bad hombres.
That's putting it mildly.
Did you happen to notice which way they went when they rode out?
Why? You want to follow them?
Just the opposite. I thought we'd try to avoid them.
Well, that would probably be the smart thing to do, all right. As a matter of fact, I did see them ride out. They were headed southwest.
We'll go a different way then. We sure don't want to run into them.
Sorry I jumped to the wrong conclusion about you. I just don't want to have anything to do with anybody like those two.
How long ago did you say they came through here?
3 days, was it? No, four. 4 days ago. Yeah, 4 days, that's right.
Well, they're long gone by now.
And good riddance.
Luke poured another drink.
I'll drink to that. Ah.
Luke woke up and stretched. He was aware of the warm figure stirring beside him in the bed.
Woo! Is it morning already, honey?
Indeed it is.
Luke sat up and looked around Doris's room, which was located on the second floor of the Golden Buzzard. He hadn't paid much attention to the details the night before. The room was furnished simply with the bed, a dressing table, a ladder-backed chair, and an old wardrobe that had been a nice piece of furniture at one time. Like everything else, it was showing its age. Luke swung his legs out of bed and stood up to stretch again. Sunlight slanted through the gauzy yellow curtain over the room's lone window. He didn't normally sleep that late, but he had quite a bit to drink the night before, not to mention a good meal. And once they'd adjourned to her room, Doris had proven to be an energetic companion. He pulled his trousers on and buttoned them. He had a pretty good idea who was at the door, but he drew one of his Remingtons from its holster anyway as he went over to answer the knock. His thumb was looped over the hammer.
Who is it?
Just me, Luke. I got the horses ready to go like you told me last night.
Luke glanced out the window again.
Damn it.
Judging by the light, at least an hour had gone by since sunrise. There was no excuse for that, he told himself firmly. Hobie might wind up being a better bounty hunter than he was, sooner rather than later.
Hobie, go order us some coffee and breakfast at the Hash House. I'll be right there.
I already did. The food will be ready in a few minutes.
The boy was smart. Maybe a little too smart for his own good. Luke pulled on the rest of his clothes, stomped into his boots, and buckled on the double gun rig. When he bent over the bed, he saw that Doris had gone back to sleep. Smiling faintly, he bent lower and brushed a kiss across her blonde hair. She moved her head a little and smiled, but didn't open her eyes. Hobie was waiting in front of the saloon. They left the horses tied at the hitch rack, their saddlebags full of supplies, and went across the street to eat. They didn't linger over breakfast and soon were mounted and riding out of the settlement. As they put the town behind them, Luke realized he hadn't even gone to the trouble of finding out the name. It didn't matter. It was just one more stop on the trail that led them after their quarry. By the time 2 more days had passed, Hobie wasn't talking as much as he did when they started out, and he was beginning to get a drawn, gaunt look about him. His eyes had dark circles under them, and patchy stubble covered his cheeks and jaw. It was probably the longest he had ever been out on the trail, away from civilization.
This is the way you spend your days?
Most of them.
Don't you get lonely, way off out here in the middle of nowhere?
You get used to it. If you can't, you don't stay in this life for very long. But even when you're in a town, you're still alone for the most part. Most people don't have a very high opinion of bounty hunters. To them, we're just one step above the outlaws we hunt, and it's a pretty small step at that. If that bothers you,
I know. You don't last long at the job.
That's right.
Luke noticed a cloud of dust rising ahead of them. For a second, his pulse quickened with the thought that the dust might be coming from horses ridden by Kelly and Dog Eater. But then he realized that was pretty unlikely. For one thing, the two fugitives would have had to stop for several days in order for Luke and Hobie to catch up to them so soon, and Luke didn't think they would do that. For another, there was too much dust. Even with the extra horses they had taken from the ranch, Kelly and Dog Eater shouldn't have been kicking up a cloud like that. Hobie saw it too.
What's that?
I don't know. A big group of riders, maybe a wagon team. Look at the way the dust is moving. They're angling across our path from the northeast. It's probably not Kelly and Dog Eater, if that's what you're thinking.
I guess it's not really any of our business, then.
You're right about that.
Despite what he told Hobie, curiosity gnawed at him. The dust cloud was moving pretty fast, and if somebody was in a hurry, it usually meant trouble. So did gunshots, and that's what was floating through the hot air. Luke reined in and motioned for Hobie to do likewise. The young man frowned as the shots continued.
Is that what I think it is?
Gunfire. Quite a bit of it, too. Somebody's fighting a battle up there a mile or so ahead of us.
Shouldn't we go see about it? Maybe Kelly and Dog Eater mixed up in it.
That's possible. Unlikely, but we can't rule it out.
He lifted his reins.
Come on.
Yow!
Their mounts were far from fresh, but Luke thought the horses had one good run left in them. Hobie matched his pace as they hurried toward the dust cloud, which didn't seem to be moving anymore. It was thinning as the breeze blew through it. That fact, along with the continuing gunshots, told Luke it wasn't a running fight anymore. The pursuers and the pursued had come to a stop and were battling it out. It was flat country for the most part, broken by ravines, shallow bluffs, and mesas. They came in sight of a tabletop formation, and Luke stopped to get his spyglass out of his saddlebag. Hobie followed suit, digging out his field glasses. Luke tensed as the image came into focus through the spyglass.
Well, that doesn't look good.
Oh, Lord. Is that a stagecoach?
It is.
The coach was lying on its side near the base of the mesa. It appeared the team had broken loose when the wreck occurred, since the horses were no longer hitched to the coach, and Luke didn't see them nearby. Puffs of powder smoke came from behind the coach as its defenders used it for cover. Luke swung the spyglass, searching for the other side of the conflict. He found them a moment later, a dozen or more riders who had dismounted and stretched out on their bellies to snipe at the coach with rifle fire from a distance of about 200 yards. Hobie saw the men through his field glasses, too.
Do you reckon those hombres are outlaws?
More than likely. I can't think of any other reason they would waylay that coach.
Luke moved the spyglass back to the overturned vehicle and frowned as he noticed something odd. Dust kept flying from the mesa as bullets struck the side of it behind the coach. For some reason, the riflemen were aiming high. They were trying to keep the people behind the coach pinned down there instead of picking them off. Someone who had been riding in that coach was important to the attackers, Luke realized. They wanted to keep whoever it was alive. That put a slightly different slant on things, and it made Luke more curious than ever.
I don't think this is a simple holdup after all. They'll keep the driver, the guard, and the passengers pinned down until nightfall. Then they'll sneak in under cover of darkness and grab whoever they're after.
We can't let them do that, can we?
Again, it's not really any of our business.
No, but they have to be planning something pretty bad. Well, they wouldn't have stopped the stagecoach and started all that shooting.
It's possible the people with the coach don't have any rifles either. Just handguns and the guard shotgun. Which means they're wasting bullets. The riders are out of range.
Not for us. Not if we get closer.
You don't seem to grasp the concept of our job, Hobie. We go after wanted fugitives and bring them in, dead or alive, so we can collect the rewards for them. We don't ride around the countryside doing good deeds like knights from some storybook.
But those people are in trouble. Some of them are likely to get killed before this is over, if they haven't already.
Luke's own impulse was to pitch in and give those folks with the stagecoach a hand. If Hobie hadn't been there, he might have been able to resist that temptation. With the young man around to goad him into doing the right thing, there was no chance of turning and riding away. Luke put the spyglass away and pointed to the north.
All right. See that little knob over there? We'll circle around behind it. That'll give us some cover and also the high ground. From up there, we ought to have a pretty good shot at those riflemen.
Hobie turned his horse toward the knob. With the attackers concentrating their attention on the wrecked stagecoach, Luke figured it was unlikely they'd be looking behind them. He and Hobie moved fast, galloping behind the rocky elevation and then reining to a halt when it was between them and the rifleman. Each tied his horse to a stunted mesquite and pulled his Winchester from the saddle boot. The knob was about 20 feet high, its sides sloping gently enough that they were able to scramble to the top without any trouble. At the crest, Luke took off his hat and stretched out on his belly to peer at the landscape in front of them. Hobie did likewise, stretching out beside him. The stagecoach's attackers were about 50 yards away, in easy range for a rifle.
Do we shoot to kill?
Most of the time when you use a gun, you don't want to leave any doubt about the outcome.
But we don't really know who those men are or what's going on here. Maybe they're a posse of lawmen. Outlaws could have stolen that stagecoach, and they're just trying to get it back.
That seemed like a pretty far-fetched idea to Luke, but he supposed they couldn't rule it out. Hobie was right that they didn't know the whole story. Luke nestled his cheek against the smooth wood of the Winchester stock as he squinted over the barrel.
Kid, you're gonna be the death of me yet. But I guess you've earned the right since you saved my life. All right, let's see if we can spook them enough to make them run.
Luke aimed for a spot about 10 feet to the right of one of the attackers and squeezed the trigger. Dirt spurted into the air at the spot he had targeted. The man jumped, obviously startled, made a motion like he was going to get up, and then pressed himself to the ground again as he looked around wildly for the source of the shot. Clearly, he didn't think it had come from the stagecoach. Beside Luke, Hobie's rifle blasted. Another of the attackers flinched as the bullet hit close enough to spray grit in his face.
Damn it! I almost hit him! I was aiming to miss by more than that.
Luke levered his Winchester and fired again, sent another man's hat flying through the air.
Yeah, I came a little closer than I intended there, too.
The attackers were stirred up and on the verge of panic. Luke and Hobie continued to pepper the ground around them with slugs. Finally, with no place to take shelter, the riflemen broke off the assault and raced for their mounts, being held by a man well back and undercover.
Come on, fellas!
Let's get the hell out of here!
I just thought of something. What if they come after us now?
That's the risk you run when you stick your nose in somebody else's business. There's always the chance they'll try to cut it off.
As a matter of fact, some of the men were already throwing lead at the knob, having figured out where the shots were coming from. None of the bullets were coming close to Luke and Hobie yet, but that might not remain true for long. It was time to send the attackers a message. Luke tracked his sights on one of the running men and squeezed off another round. The man tumbled off his feet as the bullet ripped through his thigh.
I want them to know we missed those first shots on purpose.
Luke levered the Winchester and shifted his aim. His next shot hit a man in the shoulder and spun him around. He managed to stay on his feet and continued stumbling toward the horses. One of the riflemen went back to help the first hombre Luke had shot. He got the wounded man up and helped him onto a horse. In a matter of seconds, all the attackers were mounted. Instead of trying to circle around the knob and go after Luke and Hobie, they lit out to the south, causing a big cloud of dust to boil into the air again. Hobie took off his hat and sleeved sweat from his forehead.
I thought we might have a real fight on our hands there. We were outnumbered. We had the superior position. And after I winged a couple, they knew they'd have to pay a pretty high price to roust us off the top of this hill.
Despite what he'd told Hobie, Luke kept a close eye on the gunman until they had vanished in the distance. When he thought it was clear, he stood up.
Let's go see what's so all-fired important about that stagecoach. Some of those folks could be hurt and need help.
They got their horses and rode toward the overturned vehicle. Luke approached it warily. If the defenders had been paying attention, they would know that he and Hobie were responsible for running off those other men.
Hold on. Let's give them a minute to get it through their heads that we're friends.
He hadn't seen anyone moving around behind the coach, but knew somebody was still alive back there because they'd been shooting only a few minutes earlier. He took his hat off and waved it back and forth above his head.
Hello, the coach! Hold your fire! My partner and I are coming in! We mean you no harm!
Luke put his hat on and nudged his horse forward at a slow walk.
Are we really partners, Luke?
For now we are. Don't get used to it, though. I normally work alone, and once we've corralled Kelly and the Apache, I'm sure I will again.
Sure. This is just a one-time deal.
Luke thought Hobie sounded a little disappointed. Maybe he had figured they would be trail partners from here on out. If that was the case, it was good that Hobie learned the truth right away. A man stepped out from behind the stagecoach. He wore a brown hat with a high, round crown. He took it off and returned Luke's wave.
Come on in!
Luke didn't miss the shotgun in the man's other hand. That and the long duster the man wore told Luke he was probably the driver or the guard. As they came closer, the man lifted a hand in greeting. He was middle-aged with a close-cropped, gray-shot beard.
Howdy! Sure I'm glad to see you fellas.
Luke and Hobie reined in. Without dismounting, Luke leaned forward in the saddle.
It may be stating the obvious, but it looks like you've had some trouble here.
We dang sure have. I'm Jim Pierce, Jehu with this here stagecoach.
Luke Jensen. My young friend here is Hobie McCullough.
I'm mighty pleased to meet you, Jensen. Reckon you saved us from those road agents. It was you taking those potshots at them from the knob over yonder, wasn't it?
That's right. They jumped you a ways back, didn't they?
Yeah, and I done my dead level best to outrun them. But that's hard to do with a team of horses pulling a coach, especially one with four passengers in it. Still, we were staying ahead of the varmints until one of the leaders shied at something and made the whole team veer too sharp to the side. The coach went over, busted the single tree, and the harness snapped. We were stuck here.
That's about the way I had it figured. Four passengers, you say? Any of them hurt?
I don't think so. But the fella who was riding guard has a busted leg. Maybe you can give me a hand fixing him up.
I'd be glad to try.
Luke swung down from the saddle and handed his reins to Hobie.
Stay mounted and keep your eyes open. Those hombres can't double back at us without raising some dust. If you see anything suspicious, sing out.
I sure will, Luke.
Looked like you were putting up the best fight you could.
I've been driving a stagecoach for near on to 30 years. Been held up before, but I don't like it. Any lowlife tries to stop my coach, he's gonna have a fight on his hands.
Another duster-clad man was propped up with his back against the roof of the coach, which was lying on its side. His legs were stretched out in front of him, but the right one had an odd bend in it. Luke could tell that it was broken between the thigh and the hip. The man was awake, but his blocky face was pale and haggard from pain.
Yeah. Are they gone, Jim?
Yeah, and this is one of the fellas that chased him off. Jensen, this here is Ben Wallace.
Luke nodded to the shotgun guard.
Wish it was under better circumstances, Wallace.
Yeah, me too.
Wallace's hat was off, revealing a thatch of sandy hair. The four passengers, two men and two women, were also behind the stage. One of the women knelt beside Wallace. She had a wet handkerchief in her hand, and Luke supposed she'd been wiping the injured man's face with it, trying to keep him comfortable. She looked up at Luke.
Someone needs to set this man's leg.
The thick layer of dust that covered her clothes and face didn't keep her from being beautiful, Luke realized. Her vivid green eyes went perfectly with her fair skin and the bright red hair pulled into a bun on the back of her head. She wore a bottle green traveling outfit tight enough to reveal the lines of her slender but well-shaped body, and a matching hat with a little feather in it sat on that red hair. Luke figured she was around 20 years old. The other woman was at least 20 years older, and from the way she huddled against one of the male passengers of about that same age, as he kept a comforting arm around her shoulders, the two of them probably were married, Luke thought. The second male passenger was in his 30s, reasonably well-dressed in tight trousers, a frock coat, and a vest over a white shirt. He had a fancy stick pin in his cravat. His black hat was perfectly shaped. Luke took him to be a gambler. He still had a pistol in his hand. He'd been one of the defenders firing from behind the coach, along with Pierce and possibly the other male passenger. He nodded a curt greeting to Luke.
First things first. We need some splints for Ben's broken leg.
We can bust some pieces out of the coach's door.
That's a good idea.
Luke climbed onto the overturned stagecoach and used the butt of one of the Remingtons to knock several pieces of wood out of the door on the side that was up. With his knife, he shaped them into makeshift splints that would hold Wallace's broken leg in place once it was set. Setting it would be a whole other story and might prove difficult depending on how bad the break was. It wouldn't be the first broken bone Luke had tended to, however.
Hobie, come around here and bring my horse.
There were some strips of rawhide in Luke's saddlebags that he could use to bind the splints into place. Luke wondered about the quickness of the young man's action until he saw that Hobie was staring at the redhead kneeling next to Wallace. The woman met Hobie's fascinated gaze for a second and then looked away. A flush spread over her face. Hobie noticed and realized he was embarrassing her. He gave a little jerk of his head and turned to look at Luke.
What do you need me to do?
Keep watching to make sure those men don't come back.
Luke dug around in the saddlebags for the rawhide strips. When he found them, he took them and the splints over to Wallace and knelt on the injured man's other side.
Do you happen to have a bottle of whiskey, Jim?
The driver shook his head.
Nah, it's against stagecoach company regulations. I ain't saying I never bent a rule in my life, but the district manager's mighty particular about this one.
I have some whiskey.
The older male passenger took his arm from around his wife's shoulders and reached under his coat to take out a flask.
Mr. Wallace can have as much of it as he needs.
Luke uncapped the flask and handed it to Wallace.
I'd advise drinking the whole thing. It's gonna hurt like blazes when I put that leg back the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I know that, mister, but it's gotta be done, and I appreciate you doing it.
The guard tilted the flask up and took a long swallow. The whiskey gurgled inside the vessel.
Have you ever done anything like this before, Mr. Jensen?
As a matter of fact, I have, Miss...
Wheeler. Jessica Wheeler.
Luke nodded and touched a finger to his hat brim.
You'll need to move back, Miss Wheeler, so these gentlemen can hold Mr. Wallace down.
I can stand the pain.
Wallace's voice already seemed a little thicker. He took another slug from the flask.
I know you think so, but we don't want to do any more damage than has already been done. Now, if you fellas would give me a hand...
Jessica Wheeler stood up and moved back to join the older woman. The gambler took her place.
I'm Aaron Camp.
My name is Stephen Langston.
Luke moved around and kneeled beside the broken leg while the other three men arranged themselves around Wallace. Pierce and Kemp held the guard's shoulders while Langston took a firm grip on his left leg.
Hang on just a minute. Let me finish this first.
He tipped his head back and emptied the flask with a final gurgle.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right.
Luke grasped the guard's right leg, one hand below the break and the other above it. It would be a process of trial and error, fitting the broken bone back together, and until he got it right, the jagged ends would grind together and cause excruciating pain for Wallace. But delaying things wouldn't make them any better. With a sharp tug, Luke straightened the guard's leg. Between the liquor and the pain, Ben Wallace passed out before Luke finished setting the broken leg. He got the bone back the way it was supposed to be, as far as he could tell, and bound the four splints in place on the front, back, and both sides of Wallace's thigh. That would keep the bone from shifting around. He stood up.
If I'd have known he was going to pass out, I might have told him to save a little of that who hit John. I could use a drink.
I'll buy you as many as you want when we get to Harkerville. That's the next stop on the route. How are we going to get there? The stagecoach is wrecked.
We're stuck. We're all going to die out here.
Don't worry, Mrs. Langston. I'm sure we can figure something out.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sure we can. We've already checked the axles on the coach, and neither of them is broken. If the horses didn't run off too far, we can bring them back, tie them to the side of the coach, and set it back up on its wheels. I've got some work to do on the single tree, but I reckon I can fix it good enough to hold together until we get to the next stop. We'll be all right. Now, don't you worry about that.
He glanced at Luke and Hobie.
That is, if these two fellas can see their way clear to helping us out some more.
Whatever you need. Just tell us what to do.
Luke knew the reason for Hobie's eagerness to help. Hobie was still sneaking looks at Jessica Wheeler. He was just trying to be more discreet about it. There wasn't any doubt he was smitten with the young redhead.
First thing we need to do is find that team.
That's right. While you're at it, I'll get my tools out so I'll be ready to work on the single tree.
Kemp, you'll need to stand guard while we're looking for the team. If you see any dust clouds coming this way, fire 3 shots in the air.
I'm afraid I don't have any ammunition left. I emptied my pistol at those outlaws.
It's a .32, right?
That's right.
I don't have any rounds that caliber.
That's all right. I still have bullets. If we need to signal you, Mr. Jensen, I can fire 3 shots.
As if to prove it, Jessica reached into her handbag and pulled out a gun, handling it like she knew how to use it. Luke recognized it as a .32 caliber Smith & Wesson. He realized she had probably been one of the defenders shooting at the ambushers.
All right, Miss Wheeler. You keep an eye out for trouble, too.
I intend to.
Luke swung up into the saddle.
Which way did those horses take off when they bolted?
Pierce pointed to the west.
You shouldn't have too much trouble finding them. I'll bet they didn't go too far.
Luke and Hobie set off in search of the runaway team.
Did you see Miss Wheeler take that gun out of her bag, Luke? I never figured she'd be the sort to carry a revolver.
It's not as if we're well acquainted with her. We don't actually know what she's capable of.
No, I guess not. But she seems like such a lady. I just can't imagine her shooting anybody. I think maybe she's the prettiest gal I ever seen in my life.
The team had run about a mile, then stopped to graze on some of the sparse grass that grew in those parts. Luke and Hobie were able to catch him without much trouble. Hobie's experience working in the livery stable gave him a good touch with animals. He knew how to keep the horses from getting spooked and taken off again. They rode back to the stagecoach leading the six horses. When they got there, Luke saw that Ben Wallace was unconscious. His breathing was deep and regular, though, so Luke figured he had slipped into a sleep brought on by the whiskey he had guzzled down. Kemp and Langston moved the guard away from the stagecoach, while Luke and Pierce used lassos to tie the brass rail around the coach's roof to the horses.
Miss Wheeler, you think you can lead those horses while the rest of us push on the coach?
Of course.
Luke handed her the reins, and she held the horses away from the stagecoach until the ropes were almost taut. Luke, Hobie, Pierce, Langston, and Kemp got on the other side of the coach and positioned themselves to lift and push on the vehicle.
Take them on out, Miss Wheeler!
The ropes tightened and quivered under the strain. The five men heaved against the stagecoach. Luke felt the vehicle begin to shift position.
Get under it!
The stagecoach came up farther, its balance shifted, and it fell onto its wheels in an upright position again, rocking a little on the broad leather thoroughbraces underneath as its weight settled. Pierce hurried around the coach to check all the wheels for damage.
They're all right. Now all we got to do is fix that single tree, mend the harness, and hitch up the team, and we'll be ready to roll again.
With Luke's help, Pierce vandalized both doors of the coach to fashion braces for the broken single tree, nailing it together so that it would hold long enough to reach Harkerville. It was late afternoon before all the work was finished. When Pierce declared that he had done all he could do, the men carefully lifted Ben Wallace and placed him on the floor inside the coach so his splinted leg could remain straight. The rest of the passengers climbed in after him. The coach set off for Harkerville with Luke and Hobie riding alongside. It was well after dark before they reached the settlement. Luckily, Jim Pierce had been driving that run long enough that he had no trouble following the trail even after night fell. The repaired single tree held together.
Whoa.
Pierce brought the team to a stop in front of the local stagecoach station.
I'm mighty glad we didn't have to go another 5 miles, or even two. I don't know if we'd made it.
We're here now. That's all that matters. Is there a doctor in this town?
Yep, his house just on the street. He ought to have a stretcher we can use to carry Ben to his place.
The station manager had already come out of the building.
Jim, what the hell happened? You should have been here hours ago. I was just about ready to send somebody out to look for you.
Oh, we ran into some trouble. Reckon it's pretty lucky we made it here at all.
Obi dismounted hurriedly and stepped over to the coach. He looked up at the young woman on the seat.
I'll give you a hand, Miss Wheeler.
Jessica looked like she wanted to tell him she could manage just fine by herself, but then she nodded.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McCullough.
She stepped down onto one of the wheel spokes. Hobie put his hands on her waist to steady her as she climbed the rest of the way down to the street.
You can let go of me now, Mr. McCullough.
Hobie let go of her and stepped back hurriedly. In the light that came through the station's front window, his face burned a bright red. Getting old had its advantages, Luke thought as he tried not to grin, but so did being young. A big barn stood next to the station with a few hostlers standing nearby.
John, go get the doc!
The hostler went running down the street to the doctor's house. While they waited, Pierce explained about the attack and the running battle that had ended with the crash near the mesa.
I reckon they were after the express box. I don't think there's much money in it, but those outlaws wouldn't have known that. I'm mighty sorry about what happened, folks. We got a hotel here in Harkerville, and while it's not the fanciest place in the world, the company will put you up there for the night. I'll have my men working all night to replace that single tree, and by tomorrow morning, you'll be able to continue your journey. And if there's anything else you need, you just let me know.
Pierce gestured toward Luke and Hobie.
Does that offer extend to these two fellas here? If it wasn't for them, there's a good chance we never would have made it out of that ambush alive.
Well, of course. The company is grateful for your help, gentlemen.
The local Sawbones and the hostler who had gone to get him showed up with a stretcher. The men loaded Ben Wallace onto it. The doctor examined Wallace's leg briefly by the light of a lantern.
Well, it appears that whoever set this man's broken bone did a good job of it.
That'd be Mr. Jensen here.
Well, if Wallace is able to walk normally again, he'll have you to thank for it, sir. Do you have medical training?
Luke smiled faintly and shook his head.
No, doctor. Just more than my share of experience with trouble.
Well, he came in handy this time. Two of you men, get hold of that stretcher. Carefully now.
They carried Wallace down the street, leaving Luke and Hobie at the station with the passengers.
That two-story building right over there is the hotel. You just tell the clerk I sent you and explain the situation to him when you check in. You two fellas can leave your horses here in our barn tonight if you want.
We'll do that.
They led the animals to the barn, unsaddled and rubbed them down, and made sure the horses had plenty of grain and water before heading to the hotel. Taking care of that chore meant the other passengers had already checked in by the time Luke and Hobie got there.
I was hoping I'd know which room Miss Wheeler's in.
I don't think the young lady will be in any mood for visitors tonight. It was a rough day.
Oh, I know that. I just kind of wanted to keep an eye on her room, in case there's any more trouble.
There shouldn't be any problems here in town.
They couldn't be absolutely sure of that, though, he mused as they went upstairs after checking in. Those bushwhackers had been after somebody on that stagecoach, and even though it seemed unlikely their quarry had been Jessica, Luke supposed it was possible. He was in room 12 and Hobie in 11. As usual, Luke had brought his rifle and saddlebags with him from the stage line's barn. He lit the lamp in the room, propped the Winchester in the corner, and draped the saddlebags over the back of the room's lone chair. As the station manager had said, the place wasn't fancy, but after several days on the trail, the bed looked pretty comfortable to Luke. First, though, he wanted something to eat. The hotel had no dining room, he had noticed, but there was a cafe across the street. Hobie was coming out of the next room as Luke stepped into the hall.
I was going to get something to eat.
Great minds think alike. Come on.
They walked across the street to the cafe, where the proprietor and his wife fed them tortillas, beans, and bowls of savory stew full of chunks of meat and chili peppers. They washed the meal down with several cups of coffee.
Do you think Miss Wheeler got anything to eat?
I'm sure if she was hungry, she managed to find something. Considering the gun she took out of that handbag, she strikes me as a capable young woman.
And a mighty pretty one. I wonder where she's bound for. You think she's gone to visit relatives?
Luke shook his head.
I don't have any idea. And it's not really any of our business, is it?
Hobie grinned.
We keep saying that, but somehow we get mixed up in one ruckus after another anyway.
Yeah, I've noticed. And it's a disturbing trend, in my opinion.
They went back across the street to the hotel. They entered the lobby and passed the front desk.
Maybe I'll ask the clerk about Miss Wheeler.
Luke put a hand on the young man's arm and steered him toward the stairs instead of the desk.
Go get some sleep, Romeo. We need to make an early start in the morning.
Hobie looked like he wanted to argue.
Yeah, I guess you're right. We still need to track down those two bank robbers.
Hobie stood still only for a second, then exploded into motion again, lunging up the stairs.
That's Miss Wheeler!
He charged after Hobie, drawing his right-hand Remington. They reached the second-floor landing together, turning to their right as the screams continued. Two men were at the far end of the hallway, one of them struggling to drag Jessica down the rear staircase, the other bringing up the rear with a gun in his hand. She was putting up quite a fight, Luke saw, in the brief glimpse he caught before the man with the gun turned and aimed at him and Hobie. Luke's instincts took over. He grabbed Hobie's shoulder and shoved the young man to the left toward the wall. At the same time, Luke darted right. The bullet sizzled through the air between them. A fraction of a second later, Luke's Remington blasted. The slug smashed into the man's chest and drove him backward, crashing into the two people wrestling at the top of the stairs. The second gunman and Jessica toppled out of sight.
No!
Hobie sprinted along the hall toward the rear stairs, fear for Jessica's safety making him move so fast Luke couldn't keep up with him. Hobie disappeared down the stairs. Jessica had stopped screaming, which was a good sign, or a bad one. Luke reached the far landing, stepped past the body of the man he had just shot, and looked down to see Hobie at the bottom of the stairs, locked in desperate combat with the second gunman. Jessica lay sprawled at their feet, apparently unconscious. Hobie's opponent had lost his hat, but he'd held onto his revolver. He had it in his hand, fighting to bring it to bear on Hobie. Hobie had both hands wrapped around the would-be kidnapper's wrist, holding the gun muzzle away from him. He brought his head up and butted the gunman in the face. Blood spurted as the man's nose flattened under the impact. He hauled Hobie around, smashing the young man into the wall. The impact knocked loose his grip on the kidnapper's gun hand, and the man jerked back, flinging the gun up. Luke had his Remington already leveled. The gunman's head snapped back as the slug caught him in the forehead and bored into his brain. A dying reflex made him jerk the trigger. The bullet struck one of the stair risers. The gunman's legs folded up, dumping him on the floor next to Jessica.
Miss Wheeler! Come on, Miss Wheeler! Wake up!
Luke's ears rang from the gunfire, but he still heard Hobie speaking to Jessica as he dropped to his knees beside her and gathered her up into his arms. Luke wanted to find out whether Jessica was still alive, too, but first he checked on the gunman at the top of the stairs. As he'd expected, the man was dead. He had seen the tag on the tobacco pouch in the man's shirt pocket jump when the bullet struck, which meant that there was a good chance he'd gotten him in the heart. With that confirmed, Luke went down the stairs quickly, taking them two at a time.
How is she?
She's still breathing. I was afraid she'd broken her neck falling down the stairs, but she won't wake up.
Probably hit her head on the way down.
Luke holstered his gun and knelt beside the two of them. He reached out and gently explored Jessica's head. Her red hair was loose, falling around her shoulders and down her back. That, along with the nightdress she wore, told Luke she had been getting ready for bed when the two men burst in and dragged her out of the room.
Yes, I thought so. There's a goose egg here where she hit her head. She should be all right, Hobie. We'll know more when she wakes up.
When's that gonna be?
That's hard to say in a case like this. Can you carry her back upstairs to her room?
Sure.
Hobie's arms were already around her. He shifted them a little and stood up.
I can give you a hand with
her. No, I've got her.
Hold it. Nobody move there.
Luke started to reach for a gun, but the ominous double click of a greener being cocked stopped him. Stalking along the first floor corridor toward them was a tall man with a drooping white mustache and a double-barreled shotgun. The newcomer also had a badge pinned to the lapel of the sober black coat he wore.
Take it easy, Marshal. You don't need that scattergun. The shooting's all over and we have an injured girl here.
I'll be the judge of when the shooting's over.
The lawman kept the twin barrels leveled at Luke and Hobie as he came up to them.
You two are strangers, and I don't cotton to it when folks I don't know start shooting up my town.
What about this man here?
Luke nodded toward the corpse at their feet.
Is he a stranger too?
The lawman squinted at the body for a second.
As a matter of fact, yeah, he is. That don't make it any better.
Miss Wheeler needs a doctor. She took a bad spill down these stairs.
Carry her into the lobby then. I'll send for the doc.
I can't do that. She's in her night clothes.
Reckon I can see that. Do what you're told.
The marshal jerked the shotgun's barrels toward the front of the hotel to emphasize the command.
Better do what he says.
Hobie carried Jessica toward the lobby as the marshal moved aside. The lawman motioned for Luke to go ahead too. At least he hadn't demanded that Luke and Hobie give up their guns, and Luke was grateful for that. The two dead kidnappers might have partners somewhere close by. Luke's thoughts were racing. While it was possible the two men had tried to abduct Jessica simply because she was a very attractive young woman, he didn't think that that was what was going on. It was more likely the attempt was related to the attack on the stagecoach earlier in the day. Luke was fairly well convinced that Jessica had been the target of that as well. When they reached the lobby, the marshal pointed Hobie toward a divan.
Put her down there.
Hobie lowered her carefully to the cushions. She was pale and still unconscious. The hotel clerk and a number of townspeople were gathered in the lobby.
Somebody run fetch Doc Bismarck and bring Cassius Mulvaney back here, too. Mulvaney's a local undertaker.
He'll have work to do, all right. There's another dead man up on the second floor.
The marshal glared at him.
Are you responsible for both of them, mister?
Yeah, I killed them. But in self-defense and in defense of my young friend here. Do you know Jim Pierce and Ben Wallace, the driver and guard on the stagecoach run?
What if I do?
They'll vouch for us.
So will I, Marshal.
Luke looked up and saw Stephen Langston descending toward them, wearing a long nightshirt with a coat over it.
And who might you be?
Stephen Langston, owner of Langston's Emporium and Freight Company, over in Mall City, Arizona.
Luke's guess that Langston was a successful businessman looked like it was correct.
These men saved the stagecoach from outlaws earlier today. They saved all the passengers from certain death, including my wife Edna and me. If they're involved in some sort of trouble here tonight, I assure you they're in the right.
Marshall squinted at Luke.
Supposing you tell me what in blazes happened here.
Luke did so, starting with the attack on the stagecoach and continuing to their rescue of Jessica from the two men.
Miss Wheeler started screaming as Hobie and I were going up the stairs. You can ask the clerk about that. He's bound to have heard her, too.
The marshal looked over at the man.
How about it, Ambrose?
The clerk nodded without hesitation.
It's like Mr. Jensen said, Marshal. The trouble started before he and his friend ever reached the second floor.
It's starting to look like I got no choice but to believe you. What I want to know now is what all this ruckus is about. If these two varmints tonight are part of the same bunch that jumped the stage, what's so all-fired special about this gal that makes him want to grab her so bad?
I'm afraid we're going to have to wait for Miss Wheeler to wake up and answer that.
The doctor came into the lobby a few minutes later. He frowned when he saw Luke and Hobie.
Does trouble just follow you two around?
It's starting to seem like it.
Never mind that. There's your patient. She fell down a flight of stairs.
Any broken bones?
Dr. Bismarck bent over Jessica and lifted one of her eyelids.
I don't think so, but she's been unconscious ever since she fell.
How long ago was that?
5 minutes, maybe.
Bismarck checked Jessica's other eye.
Not an uncommon amount of time to be out cold after a good knock on the head. She needs to wake up soon, though.
He quickly ran his hands over her limbs.
Like you said, no breaks. She's lucky in that respect. Her eyes look all right. Let's try some smelling salts.
He took a small bottle from his black medical bag, uncorked it, and held it under Jessica's nose. At first, she didn't react, but after a second, she flinched away from it, and her eyelids began to flutter.
Oh!
There you go. Works every time.
What? Where am I?
She tried to sit up, and Bismarck's hand on her shoulder held her down.
You're in the hotel lobby, Miss Wheeler. Don't worry. You're safe now.
Oh, those men... Two men. They burst into my room and grabbed me when I was just about to go to bed.
She stopped short and looked down at herself, then at the crowd of people around her.
Oh my goodness. This is so embarrassing.
You don't need to be embarrassed. This isn't your fault.
How did I get away from them?
Langston waved a hand at Luke and Hobie.
These two desert nights saved you, Ms. Wheeler. Just like they saved all of us earlier when those outlaws attacked us.
Jessica looked at them.
I can't thank you enough.
No thanks necessary. And you almost got hurt bad while we were trying to help you, so if you had, I reckon that would have been our fault.
Nonsense. It would have been the fault of those two men who tried to kidnap Miss Wheeler.
Well, that's right. Please don't blame yourself for anything, Mr. McCullough.
Hobie.
She smiled and nodded.
All right, Hobie.
That put a big grin on the young man's face.
Do you think I could go back up to my room?
I don't see why not. Does your head hurt, my dear?
Oh, yes, it does.
I'm not surprised. After feeling that lump on your head, it may hurt for a day or two, but I think you're going to be all right. If the pain suddenly gets worse, you'll need to let me know.
Well, but I won't be here. The stage is leaving again in the morning.
I'm not sure it would be a good idea for you to travel so soon.
Oh, but I have to.
Again, Jessica started to sit up.
Yeah, all right. You'd be better off if you'd just stay calm and quiet. I'll check on you again in the morning before the stagecoach leaves, and we'll see how you're doing then. For tonight, you need rest.
Thank you, Doctor.
Is there anyone who can stay with you? It might be a good idea if you weren't alone.
Hobie opened his mouth to say something, but the stern look Luke gave him made him stop before any words came out.
My wife can sit up with Miss Wheeler. I'm sure Edna won't mind.
That'll be fine. Now, let's help the young lady up.
Hobie was quick to help. He and the doctor got Jessica on her feet again. With the two men supporting her, she went slowly up the stairs. Luke, Hobie, and the doctor accompanied Jessica to her room. Luke examined the lock where the door had been kicked in. It would need to be repaired before it could be fastened properly again. While Bismarck was getting Jessica settled in bed, Luke took Hobie aside and showed him the damaged door.
We'll need to take turns standing guard tonight.
You think something else is going to happen?
It's not likely, but we can't rule it out.
I'll get a chair and sit out in the hall. If anybody tries to get in, they'll have to go past me.
We can take turns. Whoever's on guard will be more alert that way.
Well, all right, but I'll do whatever I have to keep her safe.
I'll be back to see you in the morning, Miss Wheeler. Gentlemen, Good night.
The doctor left the room. Hobie shifted his feet awkwardly and held his hat in front of him.
If you need anything, Miss Wheeler, just
what
let me
really
know.
What you need to do, Miss Wheeler, before Mrs. Langston gets here, is to tell us just why those hard cases keep trying to kidnap you.
Jessica stared up at him from the pillows.
I don't know what you mean. Those men broke in here tonight, but I don't know what they wanted.
Luke thought he saw fear in her eyes.
They wanted you, and they were part of the same bunch that jumped the stagecoach earlier today.
Wait a minute. How do you know that? Did you recognize them?
I didn't get a good enough look at any of them to recognize them, but it's the only thing that makes sense. I saw the way those men were shooting at the stagecoach. They were being careful to keep you pinned down and not kill anybody. I think they planned to sneak up once it got dark and take all of you prisoner.
They must have been after one of the other passengers, not me. There's no reason anybody would want to kidnap me.
And why did those two men try to carry you off tonight? I can't believe it's just a coincidence.
I'm sorry, I just don't know.
Luke was sure she was lying. The fear in her eyes was obvious. He didn't like trying to browbeat her, but he was convinced the men who were after her would make another try. He and Hobie would be able to protect her better if they knew what was going on. Hobie didn't seem to understand that, though.
Luke, the doctor told us that Jessica needs to rest. I think we should leave her alone.
Luke frowned but nodded slowly.
You think about it, Miss Wheeler. We can help you, but we need to know the whole story. Maybe you'll feel more like talking about it in the morning. In the meantime, one of us will be right outside the door all night to make sure that nothing else happens.
You mean in case anyone else tries to kidnap me?
That's right. And to keep you from sneaking off and trying to give us the slip.
Luke didn't know if she would do that, but when a person got scared enough, it was hard to predict what they might do. Edna Langston came in wearing a thick robe over her nightdress.
All right. Let this poor girl get some sleep. She needs it.
Yes, ma'am. Hobie and I will be standing guard in the hall all night.
She looked relieved to hear that as she pushed the door closed, even though the lock wouldn't fasten. Hobie frowned at Luke.
You shouldn't have jumped all over Jessica like that.
She's lying to us. She's right in the middle of all this trouble. Do you think we ought to just ride off and leave her to deal with it herself?
Hell no. But, I mean,
so
you know.
So we need to be ready for it to happen again. And to do that, we need to know what's behind the whole thing.
I guess that makes sense. I just don't want to upset her. She's been through a lot already.